Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Hello, welcome to Films Apart. Today's episode, we are doing a new film, The Monkey.
Which we'll try not to spoil because it's new.
Yes, we'd all avoid spoilers because it's still very new.
We're going to do it a bit differently. I think that we're going to talk about The Monkey a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we're also going to talk about the process about which the film was made, which we listened to a podcast about. What was the podcast? Script Apart.
Script Apart, which is sort of where Shout I out. Film apart from.
Shout out Script Apart, whose name we stole.
Don't say that. It's incriminating. theirs is a really interesting podcast where they'll get on the filmmakers, interview them and talk through the first drafts.
Yeah, slightly higher standard than our podcast.
Oh yeah, definitely a lot higher. Yeah. Better quality. They get the filmmakers on, but
not as fun.
No. They don't know how to have fun like us.
Yeah. They're not as many but let's not go down.
Also, I've had a suggestion from family members that have listened that I need to get a swear jar because I swear too much.
That was literally what I was just about to say. There's more, and then I stopped myself from doing it.
Yeah.
For your family. So, I just thought, I don't wanna
drop me in it. They're already aware. Yeah. So
that you're a potty mouth.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and cut back. I've not swore this episode yet, have I?
Yeah, you literally started it, and you said, "And today's episode we have the in monkey." And I was like, how does he just get it in straight on? You know, I don't know how you haven't said the unspeakable word.
The unspeakable one, yeah.
Yeah,
you've been closer than me.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, so The Monkey, we'd all talk some general thoughts on it without spoilers. We'll just talk stuff that's visible in the trailers, maybe.
Yeah, so essentially it is about two brothers who live with their mother, and they inherit, by chance, a toy monkey that we learn at the very beginning of the film. You learn this at the very beginning of the film, so this isn't a spoiler. Their father is trying to get rid of this monkey. Because the monkey has got some sort of supernatural power that when it hits the drum, it's one of those toy monkeys with a drum, when it hits the drum, someone will die.
I've got some any other show business on that, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Apparently, they obviously, the famous monkey is the symbol monkey. Mm. That's copyrighted by Disney.
I did.
Was it you that told me?
No, it wasn't. Sure. It was on the podcast.
We stole that.
We stole that as well as the name.
But yeah, that's really interesting. Disney actually owned the copyright to that because of Toy Story 3, where they have the symbol monkey.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know you could copyright a design for a toy. Yeah.
Maybe they designed it in the first place. Presumably they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so they inherit this monkey and they realise quite quickly that this monkey, or the one brother realises quite quickly that this monkey leaves a wake of terror in its path when it hits the drum. Let's not talk too much about the murders. I don't think we need to go into it because that's the fun bit of the film, I suppose.
For me, it's very much its final destination, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. A lot more fun. Plays a lot looser with the sort of concept of chance deaths.
Final Destination's got that element to it, but I think this is a bit cooler.
More stylistic. It played, before when we went in, we saw it in the cinemas together, played the Final Destination, what is it, New Blood or Rebirth?
Oh yeah, the new one.
The new one, Bloodlines, I think it is. Just does it in a way that I prefer.
I think straight away it's based on a Stephen King short story, so there's always something a little special about Stephen King. He adds something into his work that makes it stand out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll probably go and watch The Final Destination, but it's not massive. It doesn't jump out to me as anything massively appealing. They were a bit of fun at the time.
Yeah, I think for me it's more that I don't like...
cashing in. I don't like cashing in.
No, there's a term for it, a filmy term. About, I don't want to
type. We currently have a technical problem here in the studio. We're just rebooting him now, and we will be back with you in a minute.
I can't find the term.
So there is a term. If anybody knows the term that Kyle is thinking of, know.
It's like something like, it's not this, but it's something like gore porn or like something to do. There's like the genre of films like Saw or like Hostel or Final Destination, blood where it's very, very much based on just the death and violence and gore. There's like,
now you've got me the, now. I do, but let's leave it. That, maybe anyway, it'll come into
I think
our head.
This does that with a bit more purpose. I think Hostel does it very well. I like how Hostel does it.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fan of like Saw and The Final Destination.
So let's talk about why he made this film, because that's what's interesting, isn't it? So let's look at his past films. So he made Long Legs.
Yes, so Osgood Perkins, last film he directed was Long Legs.
Which you haven't seen, I don't believe. Have
no,
you?
Oh,
you have seen it.
Yeah, cool. With Nicolas Cage. Cool.
What did you think then?
Yeah, I liked it. I need to give it a rewatch.
Okay. I might need to give it a rewatch.
I can't remember it actually being... The fact I need to give it a rewatch, it's not entirely memorable to me.
I would say that it's fairly memorable to me, but I feel like maybe I need to give it another chance. But I went to the cinema to see it, mm-hmm. and I dragged my wife along. Mm-hmm. She didn't like horror films.
Okay.
And there was a technical fault in the cinema, and literally, like, the screen wasn't working, and it gave her time to think. And in that time, she was like, I really don't want to see this. And she had a look at, like, the Odeon app, and she was like, Inside Out 2 is on at the same time. I'm going to go to that. And you said, and I'm like, no, please stay and watch this with me. It's like so much more fun watching
like,
a horror
scared.
Film.
You're like, I'm scared. I don't want to watch it on my
own.
Yeah,
I was terrified. And so anyway, so she went off to watch Inside Out 2 and left me on my own. And so I think maybe I was already in like a little bit of like a not as fun a mood. But also, what I didn't like about it was Nicolas Cage, who I quite
like
Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
But I just felt like he was just too over the top. And presumably they knew that and that was knowing. But his campness was so ridiculous mm-hmm. that, like, if he'd have just reined it back slightly, it would have made a massive difference for me.
One of the occasions where letting Nicolas Cage go all out didn't pay off quite as much.
I think there's quite a few occasions where Nicolas Cage happens.
Yeah.
But sometimes it works, you know, sometimes it does work. And I guess he's got to a point in his life where he just doesn't care. Or Osgood Perkins has got a very specific way of working, as we learned from that podcast, mm-hmm. you know. He writes the film, but then he takes input from other people. And so maybe Nicolas Cage was going, no, I want to do it like this. And he was just going, okay, yeah, let's go with that. And for my money, that didn't fully work. But for everybody else's money, especially Osgood Perkins, it definitely did work because it made a fortune.
Sure, it did. I think I like the sort of style of it. I think, like you say, Nicolas Cage a little bit overplays it. But Osgood Perkins, he has an interesting philosophy with filmmaking, doesn't he? That he speaks about in interviews and in this podcast, film script pot.
Yeah.
Not in this podcast. Where he says, my job is to write and direct, and the job of the director is to let everyone else have their say,
put in
their input, to listen. And these are the professionals. They know what they're doing. You let the cinematographers speak cinematography, you let the actors speak character. And I think that's a really healthy way to approach filmmaking that encourages collaboration of films.
It's definitely going to make the experience more fun for everybody involved. Do you feel like that about your work? Because let's talk about this. You're in the process of writing or rewriting a short film, mm-hmm. yeah? So, and you're at the moment producing it and getting the people together for it.
Yeah.
How much say are you going to let other people have in the, I know it's a short film, so it's slightly different, but I mean, how do you feel about that?
I feel like it is going into it, I think, especially as the writer and producing it. And I'm doing camera work on it as well because I've just got a new gimbal that I want to try out.
And I might play the lead.
And I'm going to play the lead. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to play all the... No.
Yeah. This is my point.
It's like, I feel like at this stage, you kind of have to do that. Like a role that you're able to do it's going to be easier for you to take on that role yourself than try and find someone who's passionate enough to contribute enough of their time into it. Whereas the roles that I've sort of asked other people for, like I've asked you to help direct, having to produce it myself, realistically, I'd like to be able to get someone on board to help me with that because I don't really know much about producing. I'm not going to act in it. I don't like acting. I have in the past for films. We've got some actors that seem keen already. I've got someone in for practical effects, which is like, I know nothing about that. Their like makeup, their work looks really amazing, like really realistic. And it's like, I've basically said to them, once I've got a script like all finished and together, I'm going to have a meeting with them and they'll tell me that's doable, that's not doable, we can add more gore here. Like, I'm sort of free reign. I think in a person's area of specialization, I go to them for advice rather than tell them like what I need. I want to know what's possible, especially because I'm not paying them.
And for example, you talked about the special effects. I think that you can see from the evidence of the person that wants to be involved in this that they're skilled.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if when it came down to it, they made it look more like something from Evil Dead than something from The Monkey.
Yeah.
You'd have something to say about it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I find it very difficult because I really applaud, when I heard him say that, I kind of applauded it as well. Yeah. I thought that is a really healthy way to look at it. That is definitely going to be a much more enjoyable experience for people. Maybe that's more important. Maybe that also translates as well to the audience, because The Monkey was flawed in lots of ways, I felt.
Yeah.
But it was fun and I enjoyed it and I was entertained.
Yeah.
I felt like there was holes in it galore.
Oh, yeah.
And they obviously knew that. I'm assuming they knew that because it wasn't exactly, you know, subtle.
Yeah.
But it was still fun. So I guess, maybe that's because of that letting people in. And Long Legs, there was lots of people laughing.
Yeah.
It was just me smarting because, you know, Beck had left me alone.
Yeah.
No, but there was bits in it that were funny. But I couldn't tell when I watched Long Legs whether they were genuinely funny in the way that The Monkey was funny, like knowingly, or am I laughing because, oh God, you know, that's just ridiculous. That's like, there was times when I laughed at like Nicolas Cage in disbelief. It's not that it wasn't entertaining, but it didn't feel like it was knowingly entertaining, whereas The Monkey did.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know whether you're laughing with it or at it. I feel like that's, when you can't make that distinction in a film, it's difficult. Whereas, like you say, The Monkey, it's not focused on plot. It's not focused on making sure everything's tied up like neatly. It's just fun. It's a fun concept. It's funny. The actors are having fun. You can see it seems like everyone involved in the film's having fun.
I think his philosophy kind of goes against tying everything up in a bow, because the other thing that he spoke about was that he always writes about himself.
Yeah.
So you know, what's your thoughts on that? You had some thoughts on it on what you know. And
he spoke quite extensively on writing what you know, and anyone that isn't writing what they know has no right to. They shouldn't be doing it. And it's just going to result in sort of a bad story. And I disagree with that. I understand, maybe it's just the way that I took it, but writing what you know to me is using your own experiences and applying them to a story. How can you tell this story through your own lens? Whereas the way that he worded it felt very much that if you have not had this specific experience, so in his case, he's been through a lot of tragedy throughout his life. His dad, Anthony Perkins, who played
Norman Bates
in Psycho, in the Psycho franchise, he died at quite an early age.
60, I think, in 1992 on September the 12th.
1992, 12th of September.
And
he died of, was it AIDS?
AIDS,
he had to go through that, obviously, as a child. Oswald did. And then his mother died on the September 11th flight. She was on board on the flight. It's like he's been through a lot of tragedy.
The odds of that, the odds of that last one especially.
Mm-hmm. So he's experienced trauma. He's experienced death caused by, like, tragedy and just life being cruel. And I think that definitely gives him the lens to put this, like, to make this film.
Because it's about fate and it's about people dying in weird ways.
Yeah, and life being, cruel. Like, it's...
I mean, that's what he means, isn't it, really? Yeah. And to accept death, you know, that was the other side of it. Mm-hmm. But I think... I'm kind of inclined to agree with him, but I think the trouble is that when you're writing about stuff you know yourself, your own life... Mm-hmm. Especially when it's more specific, you are likely to lose sight of the bigger picture, I think. And I feel like the monkey did, mm-hmm. and in the same way as Longlegs did, and that's presumably a similar thing. Like, the bigger picture is those films both could have been better in my eyes.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that lens is a problem. And it's something that I share this issue because that is literally how I write. I write what I know. Mm-hmm. I feel like every one of the characters, maybe not always, but most of the time, are splinters of me in one way or another. They are something that I've experienced. Mm-hmm. They are someone that I've been.
Yeah.
And and sometimes I get lost in that and I don't. And I lose the kind of plot.
Yeah. Well, I think he speaks, doesn't he, about it. He says that, like, writing, making these films is his form of therapy, his form of expression, coming to terms with sort of life. And I think that's important. I think that's definitely something that all writers do. And I think most writers are guilty of writing characters as, like, a shadow of themselves or a part of themselves. But I find
that... Is that guilty, though? I mean, you say guilty, like it's... is it guilt, or is that just the nature of writing?
Maybe not a guilty of, but...
I understand that. I understand that terminology, because it is something that I feel like when I'm writing about myself, I feel like somehow it's wrong, like I shouldn't be doing that, you know?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you feel like... Like, for me, realized that a part of myself's in the character after you've made it, and you're thinking, like, you're crafting this person, and then you're like, there's aspects of me in this, and then the deeper you go, you realize, like, this is, like, based on, like, my insecurity on, like, a certain thing, and you've based, like, a whole character around that. And it's interesting. It's an interesting exercise as a writer to do that, because I feel guilty doing that, because you feel like you're lazy, like, oh, I've not come up with anything original. This is just, like, It's not three-dimensional. It's just a single part of me.
But for me, that doesn't feel... I've thought about this a lot, and I've worked on this in myself to some extent. It isn't lazy, is it? Because you're still writing. You're still having to put the work in. Yeah. I suppose sometimes it feels like it comes easier because it's like there's an inspiration in it. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I had a similar experience when I wrote a play... The meeting, stage play version of it, and there's like cast of seven, and my mum and my sister came to see it, and my sister said, she said they were basically all you, like every one of them was you, and it was the first time I even really realised it. Mm-hmm. I think I'd written novels and stuff before, and I was aware that there was stuff in those novels that were like me, but I didn't realise just how much in that play. They were all splinters of me. And what was weird about it was that was literally based on experiences of other people.
Yeah.
Like, stuff had happened to other people. I had witnessed it. Mm-hmm. But somehow, the characters still ended up being, like, a kind of mirror of me in some way.
And I think, for me, I think as writers, you need to have maybe more than usual sense of empathy. Because you have to be able to buy into these characters you're making's lives. And I think it's natural to put yourself into them, to buy into that empathy, because you need to relate to them yourself to write them believably. So I don't think it's a bad thing. And I think that maybe on reflection, actually, Osgood was right in saying that you can only write from experience any other way, like basing things off of what you've seen in a movie done before isn't going to help, but...
But it happens, and it does happen, and we know this because we've watched some of these films, you know? Yeah, I mean, you look Bone Alone, for example.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that's probably what he was saying. He I think he said something like, every script I've ever read was shit, and he spoke about, who was it, Guillermo Toro?
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro said the same thing.
He said that every script he'd ever read was shit, and the reason that it was shit was because it was people trying to be something that already existed.
Yeah.
And I get that. I get, and I've seen those films. But the point is, those films exist.
Yeah.
People get paid to make those films, and people get entertained by those films.
Yeah.
So there is room for it.
Yeah. And I think as well, this is where his form of filmmaking as a therapy and to put a piece of yourself out there, there's room for you to be able to do that and create something that is tied together. And, well, it's not that the monkey's not entertaining, but, like, is entertaining for a wider audience where it can be applied. And I think the monkey does that, but it falls down on its sort of plot and structuring, where I guess they're not the priorities for this film. You're going to see the film for the sort of the kills and the humour.
And they're not the priority, but that doesn't mean that they don't have... It doesn't have to be... a part of the process, you know, like those films are authentic. And I think that's what he's saying is that he said, you know, people hire me to be me, you know, so I'm going to write me and I'm 100% behind that. You need, you need your own voice of writing. You need to do that. But there is a refinement of writing, you know, is it, there's somebody said that, you know, there's writing is not writing, it's rewriting or whatever, you know, or whatever the quote is. It's, you know, a lot of it happens in the edit. And the way things change and the way things are kind of perfected and not losing that authenticity at the core of it. Like, you could, there could have been, I didn't really think too deeply about The Monkey, but I've often thought this about other films that you see where they're quite authentic, but there's one or two things that could have changed that you think would have made just all the difference. Very simple things. And that's the process, I guess. Well, who are we to criticise him? But you know what I mean? I feel like there's two sides to it. There is the side that he says that I wholly subscribe to, really, which is that you write what you know based on your experiences. That's me.
Yeah.
I know not everybody's like that. But then I also feel like that the process doesn't end with that. That's the starting point.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you build it up from there. And like he said, the core of this film for him was just the inevitability of death in life, and he built the whole thing around that. And interestingly, he speaks in, like, interviews saying, like, the monkey, it's not even really responsible for that. It's just like a...
fate.
Yeah, it is just a symbol of just fate, of freak accident. I think that's interesting, playing with them ideas.
Well, it is, but then, you know, the monkey still gets turned.
Yeah.
And it still gets wound up and it still hits a drum.
Yeah.
So even though the monkey, even though I get what he's saying in a philosophical sense, in a literal sense watching the film, you know, the monkey does have something to do with the death.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Unless it is a coincidence.
of the, like...
And those brothers are just nuts. Yeah, they just think that they've got some sort of control over a monkey, but it's just the world around them falling apart.
Yeah.
Maybe that is it.
I struggle with you saying, actually, about building up from a point. I'm very guilty of always having very big ideas for the scripts that I start writing and the stories I want to tell, normally going straight to, like, horror and sci-fi, and I struggle to keep things simple, even with this film that I'm doing now that you mentioned that I'm writing to try and make, called Spin Bottle. It's basically a bunch of teenagers at a party where games go too far and descends into violence. When writing it, I lean into, like, supernatural things, and it's like I'm reaching to try and get as much out of an idea as I can where it's not really needed. I think speaking to you about it, realised that, like, oh, I need to, like, pull back a bit.
Again, it's all people's, the way people do things and view things, because, you know, on the other hand, I would be guilty of have been very realistic. Mm-hmm. Where even in fantastical things, mm-hmm. like for me, I want to find the realism in it. You know, yeah. It's like supernatural stuff for me doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. It might for you and for other people, you know. Well, I say that, you know, I enjoyed The Monkey, and The Monkey's obviously supernatural, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I wouldn't write that.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
But I do think that it is better, the Spin the Bottle is better the way you originally conceived it, you know.
Do we give it a popcorn score?
Yes. I think this has been a really interesting talk. And I think it'd be interesting for people to go and see The Monkey.
Yeah.
Check it out. Let us know what you think about it. Also, writers out there, you know, let us know what your theories are on writing, because, you know, we're trying to learn about this stuff. So,
don't even know. Well, I don't even know what I really think until my mind gets changed. I'll think one thing and then hear something else and I've seen it wrong.
And for the whole life, that is the case. I think we just constantly change and move with things. So it's been really interesting to watch that film, and it was really interesting. Check out that podcast as well, Scripts Apart. It's worth watching. It's worth listening to. It's a philosophical discussion, really, with Osgood Perkins.
Yeah. They do all sorts of things. They always have, I think they've had, they have people in from, Pixar talking about, things like that. It's just any film that's...
Is it just one guy doing it, or is there...
There's one guy and his producer.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. Maybe we'll get him to come on our podcast at some point.
I wish, he's great. Al Horner.
Should we popcorn score it?
Yes, popcorn score it. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. I think I would give it 3.
Mm-hmm.
Solid 3. Enjoyed it. Entertained by it. Plot holes were a little bit too much for me.
Yeah.
Things that I want to sort. It's like an OCD thing, really. I kind of want to fix it in some way.
Yeah.
But you know, we had a laugh, didn't we? We were laughed. Yeah. There was times we laughed, and the characters, the people who played the brother, the person who played, because they were twins.
In your roles, Theo James, is it?
Yeah, he was really good in it. You know, the one brother was just kind of more normal, and the other one had this kind of emo kind of edge to him. Mm-hmm. It was quite entertaining. So
Elijah Wood,
solid
3.
Elijah Wood was in it as well,
really,
wasn't
good.
He?
Yeah, he was a fun little cameo. Yeah. And Tatiana Maslany as their mum. She was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
All the actors in it's good. Adam Scott had a cameo in the start, who plays their father, I think.
Really good start to the film.
Everyone in it. I think for me, the biggest takeaway was it looked like such a fun film to make for the actors, everyone involved. I think as well, Osgood Perkins saying about how he just lets everyone sort of do their role to the best of their ability and listen.
Yeah.
I think it comes across on screen. I'd agree that it's a 3 out of 5 for me as well. Okay. Because of the plot holes, but I don't think it makes it a bad film.
Solid 3.
It's enjoyable. Yeah. It's a laugh. It's an easy watch. It's just fun.
Cool. Check it out.
See ya.
See you next time. Peace.